welcome to Ask an Atheist, a live educational call-in show dedicated to atheism, skeptical inquiry, and the separation of church and state. We broadcast from Scan TV Studios in Seattle. We're on Sundays at 3 p.m. and are archived online at askanatheist.tv. My name is Sam Mulvey, and my co-pilot with me today is Sherry Shivelman. How are you doing?
Very good, Sam. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Awesome. Things going on pretty well?
Pretty good.
Yeah, well, being down in the South Sound, we've had the Jehovah's Witnesses in at the Dome, or as I like to call it, the Joho Down, and it gave me a little bit of a reason why I do this show and why I'm here, and now I'm in a good mood and I'm ready to work. And we've got some announcements. First off, we have an internet presence. Well, we're building an internet presence, and we'd like to point that out. We've got our website at askanatheist.tv. And there will be news, places where the show is uploaded. Anything we do on the internet is going to be on that website. Specifically, there's a form on the right-hand side where you can ask us questions, submit anything you like. And specifically, we're asking right now for any news stories, if you find a news story that's interesting, or if you just want to pass it along to us, go ahead and use that form, include a link, and we'll definitely give you credit on the air. Also, we're asking specifically for definitions of spiritualism and spirituality for our next show. Our next show is spiritualism. It's a nonsense word. It's something we covered a little bit on the first episode, and we've gotten a lot of response on it. And so we're going to do a whole episode on it. So if you're a theist and you have a definition, or you're an atheist and you have an interesting definition, please send it along. We'd love to hear about it. We're also on Facebook. That's a big thing for us. We have a Facebook friends page. We like friends. We could use some friends. So be friends with us on Facebook. Just search for Ask an Atheist and you'll find us. A lot of you are probably already aware that we're on YouTube, so we're there. But also, if you prefer, if you like watching our episodes uncut outside of the little 10-minute YouTube sanctioned sizes, our full unaired episodes appear at askanatheist.blip.tv, and we encourage you to go there. Also, if you're a local group and you would like some, if you would like a presence on our show, also contact us and let us know. And in fact, we mentioned this at the last episode, and we got a like to give a shout out to the North Central Washington Freethinkers Meetup Group. Their website is meetup.com/NCW-Freethinker. We got an email from them. We invite people who share our values, views, and agenda to join our group and come to our so far monthly gatherings and or check-in with postings on our message board. As you are aware and was alluded to here in last episode, the east side of the Cascades is a very different place, and we hope to be an oasis in this figurative and literal desert for non-believers.
So where is that again? That, where are they located?
I looked up where their meetup was. I mean, their meetups change around because it's just on the other side of the mountain. It was... From where I am, it was about a two-hour and change drive, and I'm really happy to hear from you guys, and I'm actually going to try and make a meetup. I like to have reasons to do some traveling.
Sounds like a good road trip.
It does. It does.
Reminds me, I actually have a meetup site myself that not too many people know about. It's called the DART Meetup Group. It stands for Damn Atheist Road Trip.
There's a road trip meetup group?
Yes.
I had no idea.
We went last year for a road trip to Vegas to celebrate a friend's 50th birthday.
I was about to ask you where you went. You went to Vegas. And what happens in Vegas is recorded for future reference.
Yes.
And speaking of news, we have some interesting ones. I'm going to be pretty sports heavy today because, well, there's a certain thing that just ended, some sort of lawn care thing. I don't know. I lie.
Otherwise known as soccer.
Or football. I'm into it. So here's an interesting one. It comes from the Christian Science Monitor, just to you know, notch up the irony a little bit. A vuvuzela of fatwa, the United Arab Emirates, bans the loud plastic horns. The horns that have blared at the World Cup matches in South Africa make an unholy racket, according to the religious edict in the United Arab Emirates. A fatwa by the UAE's General Authority of Islamic Affairs and Endowments declares the now-famous blast from the plastic vuvuzela is not permitted in the Gulf if it exceeds 100 decibels, the sound of a passing train. It says the typical vuvuzela blast is up to 127 decibels. I had no idea they were that loud.
That's as loud as a 727 taken off, I believe.
So a little plastic thingy, and it's just a 727.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, when I first tuned into one of the broadcasts, I heard this buzzing sound in the background, and I just thought it was something wrong with the TV broadcast. I didn't realize it was actually these horns going off continuously.
if I can geek out a little, I thought it was a 60 hertz buzz, like maybe something was wrong with my equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And outside of that, I knew nothing about them or how loud they were. I mostly heard about them on iPhones. And it's a fatwa, but I mean, it sounds no different than the kind of thing you would hear about, car stereos or anything like that.
Right.
Now, you've got kind of a big deal yourself there, don't you? I mean,
oh, regarding this news item?
Yeah.
This one comes from the Friendly Atheist. I think some of you might know him. Hemant Mehta is the person who does the Friendly Atheist website.
He's local, isn't he?
No, actually, I think he's in Colorado Springs,
okay. All right.
If I recall correctly, which, of course, if you know anything about Colorado Springs. We have this article. It's WorldNet. It's from the WorldNet. The title is WorldNet Daily Supports Atheist Billboard Vandalism. The North Carolina Secular Association put up a billboard along the Billy Graham Parkway recently, and it was vandalized within a week. The billboard actually says "One Nation Indivisible," and someone has actually spray painted under that "Under God."
A little arrow and a
yes. So the Institute for Creation Research had put out a message that essentially said that vandalism is wrong, but they can understand why someone would do it. While vandalism should not be condoned, these recent events shed light on what some Americans will do when they feel that their freedom of speech is threatened. And it goes on to say, now the WorldNet Daily isn't even trying to hide their joy about what happened. Here's what Chrissy Satterfield has to say in an article titled, My Kind of Vandals. Just when I start to believe there is no hope for our country, I get a little reminder from my God that all is not lost. It's nice to know that I'm not alone in my beliefs and that some people are still willing to stand on the right side of truth. Never would I encourage vandalism, but in this case, I think I'll let it slide. Atheists have been vandalizing my beliefs for years, so it's about time the shoe was on the other foot.
This is seven kinds of ridiculous. I'm not in favor of vandalism, but I like vandalism, so I'm glad that they did it. I mean, that's either it's a law for everybody or a law it's not. And one of the things that really gets me about this one is that a billboard is somehow curtailing somebody. Our expression of freedom of speech is somehow curtailing their freedom of speech. A simple beacon of indication beacon that we exist, which goes right into the TV show, is somehow curtailing their speech. And that's weird. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, in fact, she goes on to say, the best part of this whole situation, though, is that these secular billboards were part of a 4th of July project that placed similar ads in Greensboro, Raleigh, and a handful of other cities, and it totally backfired. They underestimated their demographic, and because the vandalism occurred days before the 4th, no one could service the billboards until after Monday. Until after the holiday. It's the small victories in life that make it all worthwhile. It's kind of takes your breath away when you hear that.
A little bit. I mean, for some people, we've just come to expect that. I mean, there's a lot of negative things we can say. A lot of words that I really wouldn't say on TV. That just kind of, it just seems unfair. It's the thing. Just like yesterday when we were talking about why we have a show. Just the fact that we're here, to them, is a problem. It curtails their rights and curtails their freedom of speech. We don't want you to not go to church. We don't want you to not be a religious. We don't want you to not go to temple. It's just, we just want to let you guys know that we're here.
You have another article?
I did.
New story?
Here we go. Like I said, pretty sports-heavy today, and this one actually doesn't have anything to do with religion at all. What it does have to do is a little bit of superstition, and that is the German soccer fans, or football fans, want to grill the octopus that predicted their defeat, and this is out of the Washington Post. Some Germans are calling for a public roasting of the Oracle Octopus, who correctly picked the winner for all six of their national soccer team's World Cup matches, including a bitter defeat to Spain on Wednesday. Paul, a 2-year-old octopus in a German aquarium, turned into a global celebrity for his uncanny ability to predict the winner of all of Germany's matches, even a group stage defeat to Serbia and an ousting by Spain in the semifinals. "Nothing beats grilled octopus," said Dolores Lush. Lush, a Germany fan who works on a Berlin fish stall. cut him up in thin slices and grill him on all sides with a dash of lemon juice, olive oil, and garlic on it. Delicious. Now, and I guess at this point we've heard that the Spain one, I mean, the match was just going on, so that octopus has a pretty good record for one World Cup, which is, I believe, seven matches.
Right, but we don't know how many other types of animals are being used for the same sort of prediction.
Yeah.
And so we're only hearing the ones that actually give us positive results.
There might be a capybara somewhere predicting things
right.
completely incorrectly, or you know, who knows? Mm-hmm. But
it's not out of the realm of possibility to get seven
and it's,
strikes, especially
and,
on the flip of a
coin. And it's not like this was a scientific experiment. They just put food in boxes and he picked a box. Mm-hmm. We don't know what kind of food it was. We don't know what separated one food or another. Somebody who actually does statistics for soccer might have been involved. And it's just, to me, this whole thing is sort of religious backlash writ small. I mean, it's you've got this octopus who's, you know, and they're really into it, and there's always a little bit of superstition in sports. I'm a fan of baseball, so I'm aware. And some atheists and free thinkers don't care for it. I'm okay with it. It's a fun game. The whole thing is a game. It's great entertainment. So I'm in line with it. But then to go and to get really into it because it's correctly, and then. He's sort of a Cassandra thing where he picks that they're going to lose, they're losing, and now they want to eat him up. That's just, historical precedents galore.
Right. Well, and again, you mentioned that there were no scientific controls. We have really no idea how real this is.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously, I've already mentioned selection bias. When you're just looking for the hits and you're not looking to see all of the misses, then it's going to look very impressive.
Well, yeah, there's the seven trials. Let's see what it looks like at 70 and at 700 and at 7,000.
Right.
But speaking of precedents, you've got another story there, I believe,
yes.
Has some precedents involved.
A friend gave this to me recently. This is from the LA Times. The Supreme Court recently ruled against a University of California student group that excluded gays. The Christian Legal Society, I'm sorry, yes, the Christian Legal Society chapter had sued UC Hastings College of Law, arguing that denial of school recognition and of access to state funding and facilities violate the group's First and 14th Amendment rights to free speech and the free exercise of religion.
And I read a little bit about this, and what was up is not their ability to exist and not their ability to speak, but because they exist at a state university, their ability to use state funding and state facilities for a group which establishes religion.
Right. Yes. No way were they being excluded from being a religious group. They were only told that they couldn't discriminate, and that was it. They have the right to accept the funds if they want. If they want to discriminate, then they simply just reject getting the funds.
And once again, we're seeing that the concept of free speech is being misconstrued and moved into areas where it wasn't really designed to be. I mean, like, for example, in your first story, it was the existence of a free speech saying one nation indivisible, which was the pre-1950s Pledge of Allegiance, was curtailing their free speech. And here it is their inability to use state funding and state facilities for the establishment of religion is
right.
Somehow curtailing their First and 14th Amendment rights. And that's part of the problem here is that in situations like this, the nature of the debate, I mean, the First Amendment, I'm not going to quote it here, my memory isn't that good, but it says something very specific. It's very, no establishment of...
And the Free Exercise Clause.
Yeah, and then the Free Exercise Clause.
Right, and I think that was what they were arguing, is that they were limiting their right to exercise their religion freely. And in their case, that means being able to discriminate against groups like gays.
And the thing that they tend to forget is that it works in their favor as well as in our favor. I mean, the whole thing about the Bill of Rights is that they are a Bill of Rights. They are rights for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just everything. First Amendment is where we go first. It's part of the local mythology.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is sort of the elephant in the room. As we mentioned, was it last episode, or, you know, sometime in the past, that Christopher Hitchens was coming to speak in Seattle. And unfortunately, that show ended up getting canceled for very specific, for very personal reasons, and that leads to this story. And this is Atheist Christopher Hitchens cancer news prompts conversion debate. This comes up to us from the USA Today. News that raging atheist Christopher Hitchens canceled his book tour for his Hitch 22 memoir to deal with throat cancer has prompted some hot debate on conversions in dire distress. So what they're saying is, well, I'll just read this, is right. Rod Dreher at beliefnet.com suggests folks join in praying for his healing body and soul. Somehow I doubt the author of God Is Not Great would object. Cancer has a way of humbling one in this regard. Anyway, he suffers and has more to suffer and needs us to stand with him in whatever way we can. Then George Birkin, who writes for the online NJ.com site for the Star Ledger in New Jersey, it would be a huge blow to Hitchens' ego, as it is to any ego, to admit that he's been wrong these many years. But Hitchens' rebellion against God has been so public that God may require a very public humbling. But maybe God is doing it this way because he desires that Hitchens give up his God, that is, Hitchens' pride in being different from run-of-the-mill mortal. Maybe God is doing it this way so that Hitchens can encounter the God he has been denying for so long before eternity sets in. And, man.
Do you notice how we're often referred to as militant atheist?
Mm-hmm.
And essentially that means that we're just sitting down at a typewriter, well, computer now, of course, well, and just dated myself.
Yeah, militant seems to mean, as far as I can see from the media, militant means that we're actually talking. I've yet to meet anyone who's willing to
sometimes disagreeable, but yeah, it's still just dialogue.
Well, debate. Debate is important. Debate is one of the foundations of this democracy. And if we can't talk about this, then what are we going to talk about? And, I don't see a sort of a Waco scenario going on with atheists. There's no caches of weapons anywhere.
No bombing of federal buildings?
No. Ooh.
Yeah. Don't get us started.
Hello. But militant has a very specific meaning, and it's military, and
right.
That's weapons, and that's hierarchy, and the thing about atheism is I've got one rule that I've applied just observationally from atheism is that if you're doing it dogmatically, you're doing it wrong, and sort of a hierarchy that
right.
militant would require would sort of demand some level of dogma that I don't think we really have.
Mm-hmm.
This is where the herding cats things really comes into play.
Right, and we're always being admonished to be open-minded, but you can only be so open-minded.
Yeah, yeah.
There has to be limits.
There's a great episode right there, just mm-hmm. the phrase open-minded. I see myself, I'm a skeptic, I'm a freethinker, I'm an atheist, I'm also open-minded, I'm willing to listen to people, I'm willing to have fun with it, but there's open-minded and then there's evidence,
mm-hmm.
and those are two different standards.
But it is really sad to hear that Hitchens has come down with cancer. Obviously, we were disappointed when a show was canceled, but of course, finding out this news was even more devastating. And I know a lot of people that are very upset with this.
And the first guy, at least he has the nicety to say that he's hoping he pulls through and he doesn't wish him any ill will, and we should stand with him. It's kind of disingenuous to say, well, here's an opportunity for conversion.
Right.
And it really doesn't work that way.
Mm-hmm.
It goes back to the atheists and foxholes argument, which I referenced yesterday, that's a relatively new argument, especially with modern warfare.
Mm-hmm.
Here's hoping he recovers soon. Here's hoping he can make a future engagement in Seattle. I'm really looking forward to hear from him.
So what do we have next?
We have some emails. So I'm going to start with a quick one. This is from Gary. No, it's not. I'm going to start with this one. This is from Corin. From SourceForge. Hey, SourceForge. I see a non-functioning link to an audio archive. Do you have any plans for a podcast audio feed? Yes. Yes, I do. That would be me. I've been kind of focusing on the hosting thing. This is new to me, but we've got an audio feed coming. We've got a lot of features. There's going to be a lot of more community involvement. We see the internet community, YouTube and people who go to our website as part, not so much as viewers, as part of the distribution channel and as sort of part of the show. And you're gonna help us make this show good. And we can't do that if you can't get at the media. That is definitely something I'm working on. It will definitely be available. It's definitely coming soon. I'm sorry. And you,
I know, well, we all of course are very busy, and But we definitely appreciate all your help with the show, obviously. The next email we have is from Jen, and she writes, if you had a child, how would you explain your beliefs to them when they are young? What would you do about holidays? Would you simply tell your child you do not celebrate Christmas and move along? If you did celebrate in a non-secular way, would you bring Santa into it? And for me, I find that there's nothing really wrong with celebrating Christmas. I really just see it as a secular holiday in the first place.
Well, I mean, the whole winter end of the year holiday, or rather the solstice area holiday, right, is a holiday that transcends religion, transcends different religions, and now transcends religion.
Mm-hmm. And it actually started out as a secular celebration of the winter solstice, which is actually taken over by the Christians, or adopted by the Christians.
I don't know if it was secular. There were sort of local superstitions that had it.
That's correct.
And I like to say that I celebrate Christmas the way the Japanese celebrate Christmas, although that's not really substantiated. I've never been to Japan. But I heard they celebrate it with whipped cream and strawberry cake, and that's just delicious. And that's the way to celebrate a holiday for me. So,
okay.
And then the Santa thing how do you feel about Santa?
Well, I think it's okay to play along for at least a while. There's nothing wrong with engaging in a little fantasy. I think especially for young children, it's important and part of building their psychological development. But I think though that you really need to be upfront with them and let them know that this is just pretend. Just like if you're watching cartoons on television or movies, it is a suspension of disbelief.
I think for me, some people seem to think that if it's a fictional character, it somehow lacks the impact that it would otherwise have. And when I was a kid, the Cat in the Hat, not so much Green Eggs and Ham as you might imagine, but the Cat in the Hat had significant impact for me, and I knew he was fictional, completely fictional, and I would probably cast Santa in a similar light as sort of a fictional thing, you know, associated with Christmas and gift giving and things like that. Mm-hmm. I would work on that work sort of with that, and as far as meeting other kids and not having them go haha Santa, you know, blah blah blah. I just leave that quiet and just try and teach manners. You know, don't stomp on other people's beliefs so much like that.
And I was mentioning too before that for me it was kind of used as a sort of a hammer to actually get us to behave, especially around Christmas time. I actually had an aunt who was a nun, and she kind of used this as a way of...
So when God isn't enough, Santa steps in?
Exactly. Well, there was really no difference between Santa and God. They were both magical characters.
Ooh, I have to think about that.
Yeah.
I would like to remind our viewers that this is a live call-in show. We take calls about any subject, not specifically about this one. Please call in. Our phone number is 206-421-5658. And that leads us into the final email, which is... this actually goes into a little bit of what I talked about last time. This is from Gary. Hi, love your new show. Thank you. Nice to have something to watch when Matt Delahunty takes 3 weeks off. We hope to establish some interestingness on our own rather than just as the backup show. I have a question. I'm an atheist in that I don't believe in any gods, but I believe in reincarnation. Can I class myself as an atheist? Well, we kind of skipped this part, but one of the things that we've done is what is an atheist, and defining that for our viewers. And last time I had a pretty simple one. Would you like to build on that? Or?
Yes, that being the topic of our show today. And essentially I've kind of broken it down into three parts. The first one is lack of evidence. And then the second, which I find kind of interesting, is how do believers actually explain the existence of atheists? And then the third one is our rejection of an afterlife. So to begin with, I would like to actually read an excerpt from my next article in the Secular Humanist Press. The Secular Humanist Press is published by the Humanist Washington. I have a copy of it here. And if you'd like more information about the Humanist Washington, you can go to humanistwashington.org. So
Actually, if we could put a call on that. We actually do have a caller.
Okay.
I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly. Effer from Seattle, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Good. Question to you is, both of you, what has Satan done for you today?
What has Satan done for us today? Is that
what has Satan done for us today?
I think that's what he said.
I think that's what he said.
Yeah.
I think he's gone. Effer?
Yes. Are you still there?
Yeah. Can we cut that, please?
Okay. Well,
drive-by Sataning. Short answer, nothing, because he doesn't exist. We don't believe in him. There's no evidence.
Well, if we don't believe in a God, why would we believe in a Satan?
As a friend of mine said, actually one of the creators of the show, Jeremy, it's not like I kept that, I don't believe in God. It's not like I kept that part of your show with you, you know. It's not like, it's not like, you know, I don't believe in Godzilla, but I'm worried about Mothra attacks.
Right. Well, if you reject all forms of supernaturalism, it's going to necessarily include Satan as well as any other demons, witches, warlocks, leprechauns. They're all, we don't believe in any of them.
Yeah, so nothing, you were saying?
I'll go ahead and move on then.
And just really quickly, Gary, the answer to your question is, yeah, you can call yourself an atheist. To me, the definition of atheism, and I got challenged on this a little bit, is that an atheist is someone who doesn't believe in God. So by that very curtailed, very small definition, sure, go right ahead. You hear what you're saying?
Okay. So this is from my next article in the Secular Humanist Press, and I've just excerpting a paragraph from it. How do believers justify the existence of atheists if the evidence for the existence of their God is supposedly incontrovertible? Sure, they can bring out the old canard that a fool has said in his heart that there is no God, but this blatantly ignores the significant number of highly intelligent people who do not accept the God hypothesis. They can also claim that we're just stubborn, insubordinate, averse to authority, are just plain wrong. Of course, when it comes down to providing actual verifiable evidence, they insist that we just need to have faith.
Hmm. I don't know what that means.
Yeah. So go ahead. But I suspect that our very existence is a threat to their beliefs because it raises doubt just from the possibility that we could be right, especially when we reject the concept of a hereafter. For the atheists, this lifetime is it. There is nothing more than this. And that makes our short existence the only thing that truly has any value. Having a finite lifespan has the potential of making every moment precious. But if you had an eternal existence, then any given moment in that existence would be relatively, if not absolutely worthless. I think that the believer knows this fundamental truth in their heart. Otherwise, they would not experience so much grief and sorrow with the death of a close friend or family member. If they truly believe in the existence of an afterlife, they should be overwhelmingly happy, if not ecstatic, for their loved one, who would now be living a joyful eternal existence in heaven. If their beliefs were true, that most sane, normal people are indeed saddened by the loss of someone close to them demonstrates to me that many people who believe in a God harbor significant doubts about the existence of an afterlife.
Well, there's a lot of fiction, and there's a lot of there's a whole branch of apologetics. I mean, the doubt in God is something that happens to a lot of people, atheism or not. It's usually, there are very few people in this world who start out atheists right now. I'm kind of lucky in that respect, in that I was kind of raised that way. Most of the people we know aren't. But that doubt exists, and there's hierarchies within religious organizations deal with that doubt.
Yeah. So to go on just with the first part of the discussion there, the first reason, of course, that atheists don't believe in a God is, of course, lack of evidence. And we're often presented with the God of the gaps argument. In this case, scientific explanations have continuously reduced the need to invoke a supernatural explanation for natural phenomena.
That's an interesting one, in that there's a lot of there's a lot of theologians who don't really care for God to the gaps as well. It's not just the atheists who don't care for it. And then, because it also leads to weird problems, like in the evolution debate, there's no gap there. There used to be a gap there way 200-300 years ago. That gap was filled by evolutionary theory, and now they're trying to pretend that gap is still there, mm-hmm. which is where this teach the controversy horse hockey comes from.
Right.
So,
well, that's just it. Is that it's non-falsifiable. When you say that God supposedly exists out of space and time, there's no way for you to actually prove that or disprove that claim. How could anyone possibly know?
Non-falsifiable is a pretty big word there. You want
to? Well, it basically means that when you have a theory, or actually a hypothesis, that hypothesis has to be both provable and falsifiable. So if you can both prove and disprove a theory, in other words, you have to have a way to actually disprove that theory.
Oh, here's what you can do to test that it doesn't actually work.
Exactly.
Okay, all right. Not a scientist, sorry.
Then another thing that's often thrown into our face is Pascal's wager.
Weekly get Pascal's wager.
Yes. Well, in a nutshell, Pascal's wager is that if all other things being equal, you should actually just believe in a God because it's a safe bet. But in that case, it's disingenuous. You're essentially trying to actually trick this omniscient being into thinking that you believe in it just because it's a safe thing to do.
Not for me to discredit an argument because of the personalities involved, but is it Blaise Pascal, I believe?
I believe so.
Yeah, kind of a big guy in computing, which is something you may guess I know a little bit about. Built a difference engine and included little errors in his design so that if somebody found the documents, it couldn't be rebuilt. And known for being a generally strange character, and it an interesting personality generates an argument like that. And it seems like a safe argument in the 18th and 19th centuries. I'm going to act like there's one because what if I'm wrong, and that way I won't be set on fire or dragged through town or something like that. But in sort of our more accepting age, we can actually start having these debates. And like I said before, debate is the foundation of the society, at least we exist in mm-hmm. the States. And if we were just to pretend that it doesn't exist because it's God exists because it's convenient, this debate couldn't happen, and we wouldn't move as forward as well as we would as a society, I feel.
Right. And then going on to the second part of what I was saying, I was going to say, to finish up the first part, there are, of course, many reasons why atheists don't believe in a God. And I've just given a couple in a nutshell. But I think it's more interesting to ask why or how do believers explain our existence? Because if there is incontrovertible evidence for the existence of a God, then there should be no atheist around.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's often presented as a case that we're not open-minded, but we're also arrogant, which is interesting because Christians claim that they are humble, but how humble is it to claim that a God created a universe just for you and is intensely concerned about your well-being and eternal soul? So, but again, going back to the thing about being open-minded, we're often accused of not being open-minded.
Right.
And I think this sort of presents a conundrum because on the one hand, you want to be certain about your beliefs, but then on the other...
There's sort of an operational definition that open-minded is willing to accept any definition regardless of the evidence. And to me, open-minded is willing to consider other people's ideas. And somebody comes up to me and says, I'd like you to think about this potentially hypothetical, potentially real situation. And to me, open-minded is okay, yeah, I'll listen. Mm-hmm. Well, let's hear it and let's go. But then that's when that ends, I then have to, if they want me to consider this as a real hypothesis, as something that exists in reality, I have to test it with what I already know and what I've already experienced, or, you know, the evidence that I have.
Right.
And, there's sort of the evidence and falsifiability, and as you were talking before, and that's not really open-mindedness. That's the critical thought, which is something we also prize
right.
in this society.
Well, and of course, for me, I was actually raised a Catholic, so in order to have converted to atheism, I had to be open-minded about this. I had to consider all the evidence and weigh it carefully, And for me, the evidence just came up short. I could not justify a belief in a God.
Mm-hmm.
So, moving on here. I think also for the Christian to accept the existence of atheists, one of the difficulties for them is the fact that we don't believe in an afterlife. For us, we freely accept that death is the end of our existence.
Well, some more freely than others. I mean, you have to wrestle with it a little bit. I mean, I believe it was Mark Twain that said something about this, that I was dead for thousands of years before I was born and never noticed, so I probably won't notice again. For me, and we got a question about this, and we're actually planning on doing a whole show about this, is death and atheism and stuff like that. For me, the thing that scares me isn't so much my own death, because it's going to end, and then there's nothing to consider after that point, but it's losing others and stuff like that. And I think that's where religion really comes in, is having to tend with somebody, having to contend with somebody you care about, not being around anymore. And that's difficult.
Right. But well, and as I was saying, the fact that we're not, I think there's a certain amount of doubt that comes in to our beliefs when we think that we're not really sure that the people that we've lost through death are actually in heaven right now.
Mm.
We have significant doubts about that.
Yeah, okay, I can see that.
But especially to have atheists around.
That's not really our debate. I'm not saying everybody's friends are in hell. I'm saying something entirely different. I mean, it's an end of suffering, but it's a completely different kind of end of suffering.
Well, and I've, of course, met Christians who maintain that for them it's very upsetting to think that people like Hitler are not in hell right now, eternally suffering for what they did. It's very difficult for them to accept that they're just dead. They no longer exist.
For me, it really would be more convenient if I just didn't have to worry about him anymore. He's gone, never coming back, nothing to worry about, nothing to consider, just off our radar.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like a really good idea. And while we're talking about evidence, you know, they have incontrovertible evidence of their God. Well, some of them do, and speak as such. But have you ever run into those folks? There's a reason we're doing this topic, is that something I get pretty frequently is, I have a question with somebody, and or I have a debate with somebody, and they ask me a question, and I tell them I'm an atheist, and they say, well, I don't believe in atheists.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like a weird thing to say. You know, you have to go, hi.
Right. So they're basically saying we don't actually exist.
I'm solid. I'm a person. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm an atheist. And is this part of what's leading into our topic here, or have you encountered that?
Definitely. I've actually heard someone say that they do not believe atheists exist.
Well, when you tell them you're an atheist, how do they respond?
Well, they typically they say that show me evidence that God doesn't exist. So they actually try to turn it back on us to explain how it is that God doesn't exist. And the problem there is that as a person putting forth the hypothesis, in this case, like the God hypothesis,
mm-hmm.
it's up to them to give the evidence, to provide evidence for the existence of a God.
And this is kind of where, I guess, open-mindedness kind of comes back into this, is if they bring us scientific evidence, then we're going to have to consider it.
Right. But at that point, it becomes natural.
But at that point, it ceases being supernatural and becomes natural. And then I really like that, and that's something that a lot of people seem to forget, is that natural versus supernatural are constantly changing definitions as our understanding of what constitutes natural increases.
Mm-hmm.
And the way you do that is through the scientific method and evidence. It's not by having Sylvia Brown come to your casino. Just saying.
Right.
But
shall we give our phone number again?
Oh, right. If you would like to call us and have something you'd like to ask us, or I guess maybe another drive-by type situation, our phone number is 206-421-5658. And the thing is, the one thing that we got is is the religion is off limits for criticism, and I'd really like to talk about that.
Right. That's one of the problems we frequently have, is that in our society, it's just not acceptable to criticize other people's religious beliefs. We've been raised that way. They have a hard time accepting that rational criticism mm-hmm. or just any type of criticism whatsoever.
Now, we're not talking criticism in the case of well, your religion is not good, or it's actually sort of debating and asking questions and questioning the evidence. There's mm-hmm. there's rational criticism, and then there's emotional criticism. And I think they're a little bit worried about sort of the emotional criticism, and that's where this politeness kind of comes in. And it's really killing off the debate. And we have to realize as atheists and religious people and theists and atheists alike is that there's two types of criticism. There's emotional criticism, you know, we get mad at each other. Then there's a type of criticism where we talk about the evidence. And if you would like to talk about that evidence with us in person, we will be at the RAM at Northgate Mall at 4:30. Please stop by. We will be there. The crew will be there.
You're welcome to join us.
This is usually where we do the debriefing, and it'll be a lot of fun. We've had a couple people show up, and it's been a really great time. Come on by. And like I said, come on by. Come friendly. We're not interested in having screaming matches in a restaurant. Well, not
definitely
real interested in getting thrown out.
Yeah. So, do we have any more news items?
Well, no. We got more material, though.
One of the things that for me, when someone says that, they question me about why I do not believe in a God, they actually suggest that I lack the cognitive ability to perceive a supernatural creator.
Oh, this is the God-shaped hole argument, isn't it?
Oh, or you mean the God-shaped puddle?
Yeah.
Kind of like that. For myself, I actually lack depth perception. But once I was made aware of this deficit, I studied how people who have depth perception are able to use the parallax effect to perceive depth. So even though I actually lack this physical ability, I learned how to adapt, just like people who are colorblind.
And this extends to our understanding of the universe as well. Like I said, the expanding definition of natural is, once upon a time, natural didn't include things like electrons, things like radio waves, and we still cannot directly perceive them. But we've developed technology and tools through evidence mm-hmm. of what those things are. And so just because you don't have depth perception and just because I can't perceive electrons or just because I have to wear glasses doesn't necessarily mean that these things don't exist.
Right.
And actually, we've got a caller, Michael from Federal Way. How are you doing this afternoon?
Oh, hi. Hi. I'm doing okay.
Good. What you got for us?
Well, I think that atheists are the wiser ones of the two. I mean, because back when they were like ancient Greeks and Romans, and they had their sun gods and their moon gods and their gods of this and gods of that, you know,
mm-hmm.
they were thinking that just because it existed, it must have a god behind it, something
right.
like that, you know,
right,
and then. When you tell a Christian there's not a God, then they say, look around you. How do you explain this? How do you explain the moon and the stars and the earth and that kind of stuff, you know? How do you explain how you got here, how this got here? Well, that's the same. We're going back to the sun god again. You think just because something exists, it must have a god behind it.
Right. That's straight back to God of the Gaps. I mean, is the ancient...
What I think is that there's some other form of creation that is way beyond our understanding, and we might never figure it out, but when we do, we'll see how foolish we were thinking that just because something exists, it's got to have a god behind it.
Okay. What do you mean by this other level of creation? I'm kind of curious.
I mean, there could be something that we just don't understand.
Well, there are quite a few things we don't understand.
Yeah,
there's still
like,
a lot of debate about the eventual fate of the universe.
Like 100 years ago, people could not fathom even a fax machine, you know? I mean, that's just a fax machine. And 100 years ago, they couldn't fathom people having cell phones, walking around with plugged to their ear and talking with nothing in their hand.
Right.
And so it's just something that's beyond understanding, and I don't know what it is, or I'd be a genius, but I think that just because something's around doesn't mean there has to be a god behind it.
That exactly. You were saying?
Well, and I was going to say that oftentimes we're told that a God exists eternally, but why is it not possible then for the universe just to exist eternally?
Right. It seems like they have a fixed length to their ladder, where the God is the top of that ladder, and they're having trouble perceiving that they can't seem to think that if the ladder is that high, might it not be a little bit higher, or might it not be a little bit lower? And these things don't really.
And I have another thought too.
Okay, mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Okay, now people who think that God is all powerful and all this, God can do this, God can do anything He wants to do, then why doesn't God? I always ask the Christians, why doesn't God, if there is a devil, why doesn't God?
Are you still there?
Still there?
Michael?
I'm here.
Okay, we just had a little.
Why doesn't God stop the devil, you know, or kill the devil or whatever, and why doesn't He stop cancer or stop leukemia or stop, you know what I mean?
Right. Well, we have a reasonably simple answer to that question, is that there's no...
Because there's no God.
Right, right. And for an answer to that question from their perspective, you'd really need to, basically ask a theologian. But that's something we have to contend with, is if this God is as wonderful as they say. We've got the whole problem of evil thing.
Right. Well, it also, of course, begs the question about God being an omnipotent, omniscient being.
Right.
In order for you to be omniscient and omnipotent requires that you actually are an infinite being. And just the very definition of infinity makes that impossible. It's
right.
An impossible state to achieve.
And when I ask the Christians, why doesn't God stop all the bad things, they say, oh, that's just His way of testing us.
And then that comes to the question of why create humans in the first place. Thank you very much, Michael.
Right. And actually, that does raise a question. Why the charade? Why are we being tested?
Yeah.
What's the point of that?
Doesn't the universe sort of... Yeah, evolution, and there's testing going on, but it's just trying to survive, basically.
Correct.
And then trying to give it some other meaning so that it can be understandable to you. And like he was saying, a lot of his questions is you know, ancient civilizations, and they needed explanations for why things happen. That's part and parcel God of the Gaps. That's right. What God of the Gaps is. Why does the sun rise every day? God.
Right.
Why did the volcano choose to explode when it did? God or gods was angry at somebody.
Right.
And as our naturalistic understanding of the universe increases, the gaps get smaller and smaller, and the places where God comes through
mm-hmm.
eventually shrink and close. And I think that's, you know, mm-hmm. as our naturalistic understanding of the universe expands.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to ask the question, what would it take to convince me that a God actually exists?
Oh, here we go.
And for me, I don't think there is any evidence that would actually convince me that a God exists. It's been often said that any sufficiently advanced technology can be mistaken for magic.
That would be Clark's law.
and in fact, if you you can actually look this up on the web on a Wikipedia, there's a scale called the Kardashev scale. And it's a theoretical method of measuring an advanced civilization's level of technological advancement. In a nutshell, it says that a type 1 civilization can harness all the power available on a single planet.
Right.
A type 2 can harness all the power available from a single star. And this is often known as a Dyson sphere or a Dyson swarm.
The idea is that the only way you can capture all of the energy of a star is completely cover the star and absorb all of its energy.
Exactly. But imagine how advanced a civilization would have to be in order to achieve that,
mm-hmm.
to actually be able to build a Dyson sphere.
I had some problems with the Kardashev scale because it seems to suggest a single path linear development to planetary and galactic civilizations. But then I had somebody who was into this sort of thing explain it to me, and that it wasn't necessarily this is exactly how they're working, is that they're harnessing all this power, but sort of an indicator of how much power they're able to capture and how much power they're able to use effectively.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as limiting as it sounds.
Right. Well, and it obviously it is theoretical, and it's only measuring a society's or a civilization's ability to harness energy, and it doesn't say anything about what type of civilization it is. The thing is, though, in this scale, it only goes up to type 4, which is the ability to harness all the power from the entire universe.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, in fact, in the scientific or in science fiction, this is sometimes referred to like the Q continuum.
I was
Star Trek.
Wondering when you would get to Star Trek.
I've got to get to it sometime.
Well, we've actually got another call.
Okay,
and,
Kevin.
Maybe we'll still tie in. Kevin in Seattle, how you doing?
I'm doing just fine. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good. What you got for us?
I'm calling because I've watched this once or twice, maybe three times so far, and I'm kind of confused because it seems to me that the terms. At least, okay, I think of myself as an agnostic, but I see the terms getting blurred. So I want to kind of put forward something and see if this fits into your idea of, you know, a spectrum of beliefs.
Okay.
If you want to take a plus one and a minus one and put them at both sides of the scale and a zero in the middle, I say you can put people who believe there's a God at one end, people who believe there is not a God at the other, and people who aren't sure in the middle. Now, is that... Mm-hmm. roughly comport to what your understanding is of the three positions?
This is actually similar to
this is very
Dawkins
close
scale.
To Dawkins' scale of certainty, which you wanted to talk about.
Yes. In Dawkins' scale, he actually goes from 1 to 7. 1 being absolutely certain that a God does exist, and 7 being absolutely certain that gods do not exist or cannot even exist. And for myself, I find that this is where that conundrum of being absolutely certain versus
I think
being
Darwin
open-minded
himself
comes in.
Only classified himself as a six, and I mean that's the thing. Dawkins. I got it wrong.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go right ahead. You were saying.
I think my thinking is if you go beyond like a 1, 0, -1, if you go into gradations on either side. It gets a lot more difficult to kind of identify your position, like I'm an agnostic leaning towards atheism, or I'm an agnostic leaning towards religious belief or whatever. I mean, the whole idea of belief, whether it's the belief that there is a God or belief that there's not one, tends to be a very hard-edged kind of idea.
It is. And I don't know
that having a spectrum where you get like 7 degrees of gradation doesn't do anything but kind of muddy the water when you're actually trying to find out, do you say there is one, do you say there's not one, or you say he's not sure? And I think if you keep expanding the gray area, then you don't really have, people are free to say, well, I'm actually a 3.5.
Yeah, I try
on this
to,
side.
There's a lot of people who are coming up with ways to gradate levels of belief and disbelief, and Dawkins has a 7-point scale. I happen to like yours a little bit more, it makes it a little clearer to me, actually.
It is actually continuous.
And then it makes it a continuous scale, I do like that. But for me, I try to stick to operational definitions of atheism, agnosticism, and stuff like that, rather than philosophical ones. How do you act? Do you act like someone? You're an agnostic. The question remains open. Do you act like there's a God and go to church and do these things? Which church do you go to? How many gods are you afraid of? Things like that. Versus. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And that's actually all the time we've got for this call.
I wouldn't assume that anybody goes to church unless they believe in a God.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm misunderstanding their religious position, you know? I don't know.
Well, it could go many ways, but we got to get going. So thanks for your call, Kevin.
Yes, thanks,
okay.
Kevin.
All right. You have a good day. Good afternoon. But yeah, I mean, there's sort of the operational agnosticism. If you're sort of an atheist agnostic, you don't really care or worry about it too much. And then there's also sort of the Unitarian Universalist type of agnosticism where it sort of a pantheism, sort of anything could happen type situation. I can kind of go both ways, but like I said, I go for a definition that's more how you act versus what you believe, because what you can believe changes. And that's our show for today. Again, if you'd like to meet with us in person, we're going to be at the RAM at Northgate Mall at 4:30. Love to see you there. Thanks for talking with me, Jerry.
It's been my pleasure.
Yeah.
It was fun.
See you next time. Again, the podcast is coming soon. I promise.
Thanks for tuning in.